meeting to order. It is 12, let's say 12:14. I don't want to end on an unlucky number. Okay, we have first up approved the minutes, and I'm assuming those are the ones from the December 2nd meeting.
Yeah, it's our last meeting.
I was not here, but I guess I'll entertain a motion to approve this submitted.
I move we approve the minutes from the last meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Monroe.
I'll second.
Got a second from Mr. Davis. Any further discussion? If none, all signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. All right, next is comments from the public. I don't believe we have any here. Thirdly on our agenda, any back there, Mr. Mather?
Great.
Review the list of local government officers pursuant to Chapter 176 of Texas Local Government Code.
We have no changes. This is a state law requirement pursuant to the Local Government Code that we have to post on our website. The local government officers are part of this organization. There's been no change, so we just ask for you all to approve that list, and we'll put it on our website.
So a motion to approve the list as submitted.
I'll make a motion.
Mr. Davis, do I have a
second?
Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. I guess I voted aye on that one. On the minutes, I was not here, so obviously I'll abstain from that one. Financial and bookkeeping matters, including payment of bills.
Hello, hello. If I remember, I'm Rose Maltapano, and so I'm going to go over this report first. All right, you can see on that front page, we are showing a deficit of the $23,874, but your developer has already handed me a check, so we're all good. I'll get that in the bank and get all the checks released. The back of that page, the top half portion, you can see all of that activity that's happened since the last time we met. You can see that your developer made two advances during that time. Next are the checks that I have for your approval today. They sold $24,311.66. And then finally on your third page is your budget to actual, and I'm showing you 6 months ended May 31st. Your variance on your revenues are running under, as well as on your expenditures. So overall, you are showing excess revenue of $52,000. The other things I have for your pleasure today is I have a form for Compass Bank, which is the bank that is your general fund, the only bank account you have. And they have this form that we fill out with the people from our office that are allowed to speak to the bank on your behalf, allowed to do interfund transfers, which you only have one fund now, but say you have a capital projects or a debt service in the future, we would be able to transfer just between those funds, and then at the time when you have debt, we can service the debt. And so just a signature on that to authorize those four people. And I'm going to give it to Hunter. And then the very last thing that I have is your annual financial report. And this is something that we do instead of an audit. An audit is a very expensive thing. You guys fall in the category where you do not are not required to have one. And so our office puts it together, and we file it with the TCEQ. If you guys want to look through it, it simply states exactly what's happened in your general fund. Your total expenditures for the entire year were $20,200, and it just breaks it down to this was insurance, this was, you know,
so
expenses and whatnot.
So what Rose is referring to, state law requires every political entity to have an annual audit done of your financials. If you have less than $250,000 in a calendar year, or actually your fiscal year, flowing through your accounts, in lieu of an audit, the water code allows us to file what this financial affidavit that basically is a snapshot of your financials. And we file it with comptroller and file it with TCQ. So if you satisfied your state law requirement, a bookkeeper can handle it. Now you have it to hire an audit at this point. So we would recommend that you all approve that and authorize Rose to file that on your behalf. And obviously, this is a skeleton of a budget and a general fund at this point. Eventually, this district will levy a tax, and that will be your revenue source. You will never collect water and sewer revenues. The city is your utility provider. But once you begin developing and sell bonds, you'll have a little bit more of a complicated.
So, is the correct terminology, I guess, I'll make this in the form of a motion, approval of the audit report exemption form with TCEQ?
Yes.
Okay. Right.
And also payment of bills in here.
As well as payment of bills. I'll make both of those in the form of a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. All right. Accept annual disclosure statements for investment officer and bookkeeper.
So Rose's office has to make an annual certification that they do not have a financial interest in any of the banks that you do business with. They have given us that disclosure statement, so we recommend you go ahead and adopt that.
So that's a motion to accept that?
Yes.
All right. I'll entertain a motion to accept the disclosure statement for the investment officer and bookkeeper.
I'll make that motion.
Thank you, Mr. Davis.
Second.
Second. Chuck, thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Conduct annual review of investment policy and adopt resolution regarding annual review of investment policy.
Okay, so this is a another state law requirement that you're annually required to review your investment policy. There are actually, in this last legislative session, there have been some changes to the Public Funds Investment Act. So our law firm will be kind of rolling out a new recommended investment policy. So at this point, we would ask that you table this item. Let us incorporate these new changes into your investment policy, and we will bring that to the next meeting. They're minor.
Do we need a motion to table?
No.
Okay. So
just table.
Any further discussion on that topic, or can we move on? We'll table item six. Moving on to number seven. Review.
Cliffhanger.
Cliffhanger, I love it.
Exactly.
Review, revise, and adopt resolution establishing the authorized depository institutions and adopting list of qualified broker-dealers with whom the district may engage in investment transactions.
So once again, annually you all are required to look at all of the institutions that you do business with and make sure that the list is updated. Rose's office has a list that they provide every year that is your list of authorized broker-dealers. There's a lot of requirements that these banks have to comply with in order to deal with public funds. They have to be, they have to have proper collateral over the FDIC limits, and a lot of businesses, banks do not want to deal with public funds just because of all of the regulatory requirements. But this is a list that is complete of institutions that you could do business with.
And do we just need to approve that list?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So, motion to approve the list. What's it titled?
List of authorized broker dealers.
Authorized broker dealers. I'll make that in the form of a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
I think Mr. Davis went out on that one. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign.
Y'all.
Report on development of the district and approve development financing agreements and any necessary assignments.
You
want to
start, or you want me to talk about financing? Okay. So, as you all are aware, there's a new partnership entity, development entity that has started to got involved. So, Bill's. So, the original development entity, Grid Raceplex, has a financing agreement with the district. And what that agreement says is that to the extent that entity advances funds for public infrastructure and public projects, the district will use its best efforts once all of the legal parameters are met to sell debt to reimburse Grid Raceplex for all of the costs incurred. There is a new partnership that will be doing this first phase of development, Southern Point. Some of the same principles, not all, but Southern Point will be the development entity that will be now going forward and advancing funds to do the water, sewer, drainage, paving, and operation advances that are all going to be advanced to the district to pay for these costs, and we will eventually be reimbursing that development entity. So what I discussed with Bill about doing is having a second development financing agreement in place that is identical to the first, but with the contingent that the previously incurred costs, because Grid Raceplex has incurred some costs that can legally be reimbursed. So everything that has been paid for by Grid Raceplex to date will still be owed Grid Raceplex, and everything moving forward will now be paid to Southern Point. That's the we want to make sure that
so the district will repay it later on, or
exactly.
The new development agreement will
exactly
the new
district,
partnership will do it now.
The new partnership.
What, this allows is the new partnership, and we have a Southern Point LLC is the master developer now.
Okay.
So almost everything's being assigned or has been assigned to, what it needs to develop. And so it will have different entities underneath it. So like, well, our first section is a separate entity, bankruptcy remote entity. But, you know, so that we don't have a finance agreement for every entity of every phase, we have it with the master developer. And the master developer will be the distributor of the funds,
okay,
because they all are straight flow through entities and they are related entities. And what this allows us to do is make a clear demarcation between the previous master developer, Grid Raceplex Holdings, to now the going forward master developer, which is Southern Point LLC, which is the partnership between my investment group and Wallace Phillips Investment Group.
So, Bill, is there any priority of payment? I know it's a, probably a negligible balance of a grid, but do they have a priority of payment as revenues come
in? We have an agreement within Southern Point and Grid Raceplex on how that money gets distributed. Yeah.
So a waterfall.
There's a waterfall we have set up. It's something that the district doesn't have to mess with. The only thing the district has to do is perform its best efforts to sell a bond. And our waterfall will take it from there. So the district's not having to make those decisions.
It's really better for the district standpoint if they can, if they know which entity to reimburse, and then the development entities between themselves can disperse.
Yeah.
And we will get, once we disperse those funds, we will get a receipt signed by Southern Point that says we're paying the right person. If we're not, you indemnify the district, pay us back, and we pay the right person. So we will make sure that we get closure.
Get lien releases.
You're thinking more on the construction. Lien releases are more down below the district, but we will have an application that is able to give to TCEQ. Lien releases are part of that. That everything, and you have clear title.
I'm probably overcomplicating this, but what if the district defaulted? What are your rights at Grid on getting payment?
Well, you would. So the district won't default. So we.
But what if we did?
Well, if the district went into bankruptcy, bondholders would have the first claim on any tax revenues that would be generated.
Bondholders of the debt.
So the only way a district. We talked a little bit about this.
So theoretically, that would wipe out Grid's position.
Right.
Got it.
So. The developers takes all the risk in this deal. So the only time that the developer gets reimbursed from bond proceeds, remember a district is only operates as a reimbursement entity. So the value, the TCEQ rules require that we have to have a debt to assessed value ratio of 10-1 before the district can even sell bonds. So when we get to that process, what we will do is once we have sufficient value on the ground, and your financial advisor has deemed that this is the time, we've got enough value, we can actually sell bonds in a feasible amount. So say, you know, we get to the point where we can make application to the TCEQ to sell maybe a $2 or $3 million bond issue, we'd have to have 10 times that value already on the rolls.
On the ground, assessed.
You got taxpayers out there. In Texas, it is highly unlikely for taxpayers to not pay their property taxes. So since those TCEQ rules have been in effect since the 80s, there have been zero defaults on municipal utility district bonds. But prior to that time, you were able to sell raw land bonds, and that's when you got into problems. But in today's current regulatory environment, you're not going to have that situation. So once you get to a point when it's feasible to sell bonds, we will apply to the TCEQ, we'll get TCEQ approval, and that's sort of a 7, 8, 9 month process. Then we can sell. We have to go to the Attorney General's office to get approval. So it is a highly unlikely scenario where you'd ever enter into a default situation. But as far as what you're talking about, a lien situation, the contractor, once the jobs are complete, will have to provide the district a affidavit of liens.
That
all liens, there's no liens on the project, everything's been released. So,
at what point is that? Is that complete development, or is that lot sales, or as far as the bonds are able to be sold.
So as it is when you have enough value on the ground, and you need to have, from a marketing standpoint, you've got to have at least 30 homes out there, 30, 40 homes. Okay. So you will have rooftops, you will have taxpayers before you ever get to the point where you're selling bonds.
And you think about it, from a lien release standpoint, you're not going to be able to sell
a lot. Correct.
To build a house on when the prior, let's say you had a...
You don't have clear title to it.
You'll have 40 or 50 people living out here before you ever go to the market.
Right. Okay.
So there, you know, it's a clear title issue.
Yeah.
You can't even get a home loan without the clear title.
Right.
So the development group will have invested quite a bit of money into the project before they even get to the point where they're looking to get any kind of reimbursements back. They will have had to put in all of the major infrastructure. They will have incurred operating advances. All of the creation costs that were incurred are all reimbursable. So it will take multiple bond issues to get them whole on their infrastructure costs. It's not a quick turnaround.
All the questions you had on the...
So, but in order to even reimburse a development entity, they've got to have an agreement with the district. And so this second agreement puts in place the ability for the new partnership to get its infrastructure costs reimbursed when it's feasible to sell bonds.
And I'll say, you know, it's an important document for the district and the developer, but the developer, when we're developing,
lenders,
we're telling lenders and investors, we have the ability to get reimbursed from the district besides just lot sales. And of course their question will be, well, show me the document that says you have the ability to get reimbursed. Because sometimes a lender will require you to
assign those reimbursement rights. That's
to
often
them, like a collateral assignment of a contract.
Well, I was going to say, so that happens a lot. So we've had a developer.
You won't get my money unless you sign.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah. And that's exactly
right. And it's a very normal process. So y'all will be presented at times with maybe a tri-party agreement or something from a lender.
Well, and actually, your financing agreement enables the developer to assign his rights to reimbursement to the bank.
To the bank,
yeah.
Okay. So that's really their get out of jail free card.
Yeah, if for some reason development entity goes away and they're stuck with a construction contract out there, they want to know.
Is that typically enough in itself to get financing?
No. No, that's the bells and whistles.
They want the developer to kiss that note.
They want us to kiss it, wrap it, hug it,
to it. Sleep with it.
They want everything assigned. No,
we don't want to put that in the middle.
It depends on which year.
We don't want to know what Bill had to do.
Let's just say I'm well invested. I'm well invested and incentivized. So that's the formality side. Do they need to approve?
No, I think based off the way it's presented, it's just an update, correct?
No, we'd ask for y'all to approve a development agreement with Southern Point.
Okay. If y'all are okay with that, and then I'll give you the development agreement update of where we are in development.
So we are approving
a second development agreement that's identical to the first with Southern Point.
Will that run parallel, or will it take over?
It will not. It will run parallel. We've added some language that it is effective as of today, and that anything that is previously incurred will go to Grid Raceplex. And what I'll bring back for the next board meeting, and we'll distribute it ahead of time, is an amendment to the Grid Raceplex agreement that they acknowledge that there's a second development agreement, and that their agreement carries them through basically till today.
So we'll have an end date.
Okay. So we'll be able to have a bright line as to we know.
Sure.
All
right.
Okay. I move that the original development agreement be terminated when they revise it with the new development agreement starting today as Southern Point.
Right, I was going to say, so we'll go ahead, next month I'll bring an amendment to the existing one, but today, let's go ahead and enter into the same second development agreement with Southern Point on the same reimbursement terms and to be effective as of today.
Okay. What you just said.
What you just said is the
motion. So move.
Do we understand? I think we all understand.
Y'all understand. Yes.
Yep. Okay. All right. I'll entertain someone to. That is a motion. Do I have a first to that motion?
I'll first it.
I'll first it.
All right. Lovely. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Oh, same sign.
Okay.
Okay. Now we're moving on to a report.
A report. Yes. The report is here is our.
I like that first.
This is the entire development. This is the preliminary plan that's been approved. We're actually having to resubmit the preliminary plan to make some tweaks, but this is the preliminary plan that's been approved, and it has all the entitlements, all our development agreements and everything, so we can build. This allows us to go on to phase one and start construction, which I'm getting ready to show you that. What this shows is here's Highway 6 and our frontage, and the commercial piece is the urban piece. Here's all the residential, and this highlighted piece, this yellow piece, is going to be section 100. First phase is 150 lots. There's a number of reasons why we're back here, and I will just kind of go through just the highlights of them. But originally we wanted to have up front near the highway, and then of course, we have all this dirt we have to move from the speedway, which is a considerable amount of work and expense. So we were going to come down to this section here, which is right off Peach Creek Cutoff Road, so we could have a primary entrance here. However, and I won't get into politics on this, but the federal government decided that we needed to have another permit and that they have purview over a creek that runs through this thing that's dry. I'm not going to get into why. I'm just going to. I have to have a permit to touch my own creek that we created. Now, I guess you know my feeling on that. And we also have to build a lift station down here because we're going to be lifting our wastewater from here. Most of this goes up here. So, what basically it turned out is that we're going to have to build this anyway. We're going to have to lift this way. So this goes here. So we're here. This is the, from a topography standpoint, one of the easiest pieces to start working on. The other side of this is we needed to get access to Pipeline Road, and we didn't have that access for a while. And through the beginning of this year, we were able to get this access, which allows us to now. What this access does is it allows us to bring on this phase, but as we bring the other phases on, we don't have to have these two primary accesses ever to build out our development. We are not dependent on any other development around us, and that has to do with fire access and things like that. So this little access point allowed for this, and so the phasing diagram, which right there, right behind me, basically we're going to be coming from phase one to phase two here on the street cutoff, and then we'll come up here about phase three or four and connect to Highway 6. So we will sort of envelop from this side, and then at that point we will have, we believe, sufficient enough amount of housing density and things like that, that we will start actually raising the major hills and stuff in the speedway to start developing on that. One of the things we did add, though, is over, we weren't originally going to touch one of the big corners, we call it NASCAR 1 and 2, because of the amount of dirt, and it's better to move lots of dirt at one time instead of just little pieces of it on a per unit basis. But because we're going to have to do this lift station all the way across here, and we're going to have to cross those anyway, you have a choice of either boring underneath it or laying back the dirt. And so once you start laying back dirt, how much dirt do you lay back to make it economical? And so actually in our costs in phase one, we will be laying back a significant portion of the NASCAR 1 and 2, not the big grandstand hill. So this is phase one. It's at the city, we're through our getting our approvals, getting our plat done. What we are targeting here, these lots here, and most of our development, We are trying to be the lowest priced new home in College Station ISD. That's where we kind of want to live. Not kind of, we do want to live there. So we have 50 foot by 115 depth lots as an average. We have 5 foot setbacks. We have 20 foot setbacks in the front. A little different than when you're building inside the city, you have to have 7.5 foot setbacks. And so it allows for this a little higher density. And so this yellow area here is where our builders are going to be putting model homes. We're actually going to have, and we're finalizing some of our agreements, that our builders have to have professionally staffed model homes. Because this is much more of a production type thing. This is where, you know, somebody is short of time, or you know, maybe it's their first home, and they can walk into that model home and they can go through and say, I want that appliance, I want, you know, that cabinet, I want that type of stone. And at the end of the process, the builder can look over and say, your house on that lot in 4 months. That's the goal.
What would be the minimum square footage on those lots?
Of the lot or the house on the lot?
The house on the lot.
1,500 square feet.
Going up to what?
We're going to really let the builders dictate that. But really, on this size of a lot, you're really going to be 1,700 to 2,500 square feet is about the size of it.
So have the setbacks already been approved, the 5 foot?
Yes, it's in our development agreement.
Okay.
Yeah, so, yeah, we're... That part's done. So the builders will be here. The two red ones are lots that we're just reserving. And it's not anything other than we don't want people coming in here and suddenly you have one of the home builders here blocking a view, or if one of our home builders drop off, we may need to put another one in here. This lot here, we're actually going to, even though it will be a lot, it's going to be there so it looks good. We want people, we have to paint a picture and a story coming off of Highway 6 down Peach Creek Cutoff. When you turn in here, what this development is going to look like. Yeah. Because we are starting in the back. You don't have the big, nice, new front.
Are you going to put a big entrance into the back to start?
Yeah. Well,
not a castle.
No, we're not paying big entrance. We're paying a lot of pictures. And no castles, no windmills. But one of the things over here is this part in front of the model home area. This is we're putting parking in here.
Okay.
And this parking, you can go over and look at some of the landscaping diagrams. This allows people to come in and park and go to the model home, not queue up on the street.
Yeah.
But also, it starts painting the picture into our trail system. And it starts letting them know what the amenities are going to be that they'll be able to access. So that's phase one. We actually, if we were in the position with approved contracts, which is one thing y'all would be going through, and I have to get some lien priority issues taken care of, but basically I have construction contractors are ready to drive onto the property today. Not letting them because I need to protect the priority of liens and stuff like that. But our goal is to deliver these lots by February 1st in 2018. We actually have had builder meetings. I'm not at liberty to tell you any of the details of it, but I can tell you that we've had more requests for lots than we have, from the builders, than we are delivering. So one of the things that we will be doing next is in the phasing diagram, you're gonna see a little phase 101. And I forget, I think it's 40 lots. And it's there for a purpose of, it's easy to add, but also in case the Army Corps of Engineers delays my permit, I need to have a place to go put more lots. But we will take phase 101 of 102, and almost immediately after getting this going, we're going to go ahead and design them, plat them, and permit them so that we will be able to pull those right off the shelf when the builders say, we're going to be out of lots.
Yeah.
Yeah. Most of the builders believe that they will go through our lots within 1 year. Mm-hmm. We're just, there's really, for this price point, what we're delivering for, and especially with our amenities package, location, all that, there's nothing left in College Station ISD that can compete with that. We have right now 5 to 6 very strong quality builders that are showing very strong interest.
When do you think you're going to start putting in streets?
Streets will probably go in around September.
Wow.
September, October. We got to get our underground utilities. First thing that's going to actually start happening, and a lot of people won't see it, is we're going to do the offsite utility. We're going to run the sewer line all the way down to Lick Creek Park Plant. It's in the park, Lick Creek Plant. Well, nobody sees that because it's in the far corner. So we'll be doing a lot of that construction. Well, people, if they did look, and they won't be able to see much from our property, but we'll be doing clearing and grubbing, and they'll see, a lot of the major dirt work will be going through August.
Those are 96 footers. Those are 96 footers.
96 footers.
Cul-de-sacs.
That's why it's 150, 952. they're new.
27 foot streets, curb and curbs.
All concrete.
Welcome to College Station.
Yeah, that's right.
So when you had, when y'all acquired
Rich.
So access from Pipeline Road, was that an acquisition that you purchased or is it
yes.
an easement? Okay.
Well, it is an easement. We acquired an easement. And we couldn't acquire the whole property. And the gentleman was very nice. We were really cooperative to work with. But by county and city platting standards, you can't have a lot or a piece of property less than 10 acres outside the ETJ and out in the county. Well, his property is only 6 acres total. So even if I was going to buy off part of it, I couldn't. But we only needed an easement.
Right.
So we acquired an easement from him.
Okay.
And that easement we can dedicate that easement to any governmental entity we want. So once we get it done, if the county accepts it or the
city,
the district can accept that easement.
Is Peach Creek in condition it can handle this extra load?
Yes. And it won't be handling much of this load. Actually, we're working on our traffic impacts, but by our agreements, we don't, 250?
Correct.
250, until we get to 250 lots, do we even have to do a traffic impact study? But we study that already, but that going to Peach Creek Cutoff Road, when we go to section 103, which brings in the major thoroughfare, this road will become a tertiary entrance.
Right.
Eldora is the name of the road.
Okay.
Any other questions?
And their song? Oh, that's Elvira.
Eldora.
Yeah, that's Elvira.
The Explorer.
The racetrack.
Oh, okay.
That's the name of a racetrack.
You're not on the naming commission.
All right, as we're on item 9, are there other, how much did he cover of A, B, C, D, and E, or do we need
well,
to cover?
Well, I think your engineer's got a report under
right,
the engineer's report.
Engineer,
yeah, separate
you're up.
Report.
Okay. Good afternoon, directors. I'm Derek Walton with Jones Carter, and we're just going to go ahead and run through this real fast. This is item 9. Do we do a motion to approve on each A, B, and C?
Well, what we could do is why don't you go through your report and then the board could approve
one
the report.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I like the attorney's thoughts.
Okay, so we have item A's authorization to design district facilities. We currently have executed proposals with the developer for the design of the listed facilities. And we're requesting the board's concurrence on these authorizations. These include the offsite sanitary sewer, which Bill mentioned, the demo clearing, grubbing, and mass grading that serves section 100, and the water sewer drainage to serve section 100, and the major thoroughfares to serve section 100, and as well as the lift station, what we call the phase 1 lift station which will serve Section 100 plus a couple other subsequent sections.
Yeah. Just to back up, and this is sort of our first run at construction contracts. Like every other political subdivision, y'all are required to competitively bid any construction contract over $75,000. So the board will authorize the engineer to design the facilities. You'll approve the plans once they've been designed, and then you will authorize the bidding of these construction contracts, and then you will actually award the bid to the bid that's the most feasible to the district. Usually it is the lowest bid. You can make an exception if there is something unusual in the bid or the contractor has not ever done that kind of work before, or you feel like it's a low-ball bid or there's an error, but almost always the presumption is that the most economically beneficial bid to the district is the lowest bid. So because of that, what we've done is under this agenda, we've kind of set out the actions that the board will take every month related to engineering items. You'll authorize design of certain facilities, you'll approve the plans, you'll review the bids, and you'll award. And then you will actually approve pay estimates as the contract progresses, and then you will ultimately accept the facilities. So we've given Derek here sort of the bare bones or the skeleton of how these projects will roll. There is a form construction contract that Jones and Carter uses that we have signed off on and we've approved that is a very favorable contract for our use and for governmental entities, and that's the form that they're going to be using. As we progress and award contracts, our law firm will approve the insurance and the bonds to make sure that that's all enforceable as we go along. But so that's kind of where Derek is starting here with the authorization to design certain facilities, and then he'll move down the agenda.
Yep.
Okay. But ask any questions as we go along.
Is it the engineer's responsibility to vet all the bidders?
Your engineer will do that on your behalf, but he will bring you the bid tab, and that's later on in the agenda. They've actually, so because it's been a while since we've met last, there's been action taken. Now, remember, your developer is right now paying for all this. So because you hadn't met in a while, your developer had authorized, your engineer to begin design of these facilities, but he wants to go ahead and present them today, talk about the plans, show you the facilities, and then review the bids of those projects that have actually been bid. Go ahead.
Dumb question, but the engineer of record contracted with the district or with the developer?
Both. So he's got a contract with the district for the design, construction, oversight of all public infrastructure. Typically, it doesn't always have to be the same, but your developer will also engage the same engineer to do the design of the private infrastructure.
So that, when you say, Mom, that part of the infrastructure that's reimbursable by the mud tax?
It's all public.
So, question, who reviewed the contract by between the district and Jones Carter?
We did on your behalf a while back.
Was that something we approved already?
Yes, y'all did it at one of the early organizational
meetings.
First
or second meeting, yeah.
Is it favorable in regards that all waivers of liability limitations are done in our favor? They're carrying professional insurance
at huge levels? Yeah,
in the event that there's design failure, we will have absolute recourse against the folks sitting across from me.
And the one thing to keep in mind is that all of your consultant contracts are terminable for any reason with 30 days notice. Our contract, engineers, everybody's contract, there is for no reason. And we do have a standard contract we use with Joan and Carter that we reviewed. But
how about items like surveying and geotechnical services or telecommunications engineering services? Are those under their contract with us?
As far as it has to do with your public infrastructure, yes. Your development entity has another contract with Jones and Carter that's separate and apart. But yeah, I have not looked. I think we've got it here. Do we have their Jones and Carter contract?
I trust you.
No, I'm happy to send it to you. And we do make sure that they've got the appropriate levels of insurance and that they.
And like a city, I see in here that at some point we will be accepting the work.
We will.
Like a city municipality, at that point, it's on our back to maintain and take care of, just like a city.
Well,
right?
In this case, actually, we will be conveying it all to the city. Yeah. So
okay.
So we will accept it, but then
turn right around and give it to the city.
Yeah.
It'll be all conjunction.
We have to comply with every city code and ordinance related
to utilities.
And
that's in the development agreement?
That's in our development agreement.
So let me ask
what
question.
What Thunder was talking about is a normal MUD. It's not uncommon for a MUD district to not only be the financing, but they're also the operator.
Absolutely. Yep. Like that's what I'm accustomed to.
Right.
Yeah.
They maintain there's a lift station, it's theirs to maintain.
That's right.
Absolutely.
Now they have to build their own sewer plant. They have to maintain. They have to bill every customer, all that kind of stuff. Our development agreement and the agreements attached to the utilities strategic partnership agreement with the city is the city of College Station.
It's accepting.
They accept it. They accept the maintenance of it. They will bill the customer. So the operating side of a MUD district, we don't have.
That's what the city wanted.
They wanted
all these folks to be city customers.
But at what point in time do they accept it? I mean,
pretty much as soon as we
complete it.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
But I think, Chuck, like in standard, there's a one-year warranty.
Risk.
That's where, I guess, my concern is if in the event there was a sewer failure and it's either construction or it's design, it's one of the two. And they're both going to point at each other and blame the
sure.
other. So I just want to make sure
that
the district during the period. So essentially, once the city accepts it, Chuck, it's on them if it breaks.
Correct.
But during that one-year warranty period, if it fails, it would be incumbent upon us. That's why I want to make sure that they don't stick their crap language in there that says we're limiting our liability to the fee amount and all this other creative language they do to try to make money and get out of any liability.
So
no offense to those in the room,
so our construction contract has bonds attached. So we have the payment and performance bonds, and we will also have a maintenance bond. And any warranties and bonds that go with the contract, the district and the city will be beneficiaries of those bonds. So when we actually, so the contractor will have to warrant the work, obviously, during the construction contract. And then afterwards, he'll be required to provide maintenance bonds, and he'll have warranties in place. Those will be in place for the benefit of the district and the city.
And those bonds are in place just until through the warranty period, correct?
The maintenance bond?
Yes.
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
So when choosing the provider, you want to make sure they're going to still be around.
The contractor?
The contractor.
Or your engineer?
The contractor. Engineer, when they're selecting the contractor, we don't necessarily just want the lowest, but we want somebody that's going to be around to.
Absolutely. I mean, so, most of the time, the engineer will have a list of qualifications and things that the contractor has to fulfill, and you all jump in any time. But Jones and Carter is a big shop, and so they're familiar with the contractors that are bidding on these projects, and so they almost always will want to do business with folks that they've used in the past, or they get good,
right.
They'll have to provide references and
Absolutely.
Get good references on.
Absolutely.
So
and I guess as usual in this environment, clearly it's not going to be common practice that we're digging into. I mean, they're going to dig in, they're going to vet these recommendations
right.
and then bring forward to us.
Correct.
We recommend
BidTab with these contractors.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
And almost always the presumption is in favor of a low bidder. But oftentimes we see, especially when things are really blowing and going, you'll get somebody that's just trying to get into the business and lowball it, or it's a contractor maybe from Louisiana that, the folks say, we just don't think they're going to be able to mobilize, they're not going to be able to put enough people out there, or they've had bad experiences with the contractor. And go ahead, Adam, sorry.
As part of our recommendation of award to the board, the district has the ability to select the most advantageous bidder. And that, like Annette said, is not always the lowest bidder. Sometimes it's evaluated on time because we give them an option to write in a contract duration. And so a particular project may be more advantageous for the district to be done in a certain period of time instead of a certain dollar amount. But we get to evaluate their references, their hard qualifications as a bidder, as well as personal experience and other references as part of that recommendation.
Yeah. That being said, though, it has to be an objective test. It can't just be who Jones and Carter likes better. And so, or gosh, you know, they're already out here. They, you know, so it's got to be for a objective reason. You don't think they can finish on time or something, because you will have a unhappy contractor calling the board or the engineer that was the low bid, if they're qualified, coming in and not happy.
Why?
Yeah. Same. Why me?
Okay.
So, anyway,
but time is functioned into that analysis.
Yeah. For instance,
so it's easy to be low bidder when there's no time factored in.
Correct.
Yeah. That's by months. Also, Harvey said that.
So your engineering report will look like this now going forward every month, where we list all the projects you've got going on with all the requisite approvals that are needed.
Right.
So, sorry, jump in, Derek. Right.
No, you're good.
Kind of lay the groundwork.
That was really good. We're going to sort of take a step back and start back over now that we've really introduced things. And I'll do it quick. This is the authorization to design district facilities. So we're basically presenting our proposals, seeking your authorization for these five contracts. These are already executed with the developer, and then B is the approval of the plans and specifications for the district facilities and authorization of advertisement for the bids for construction facilities to serve the district. This is all subject to permit approval from the city. Now, what we have is we've got two projects, the off-site sanitary sewer and the demo clearing and grubbing, that these were recently advertised and we received bids, so that's where you have the packet there. That will get to the next, that's the next item on the list here. But this is just the approval of plans and specs and authorization of advertising. We have three upcoming projects that we're gonna advertise here in the next few weeks that we're seeking authorization to advertise. And that's the three upcoming are the water sanitary and drainage that serves Section 100, the construction of major thoroughfares that serve Section 100, and Phase 1 lift station.
And just one thing to note on that, the authorization and approval of plans and specs is conditional on College Station's approval.
Yep.
As well. So those plans are in review with City of College Station right now, so your authorization is conditional with theirs as well.
So you already submitted all the designs?
We've already submitted the design, yeah. So they're all, five are in review. Yes. And
where are you on the approval process with the city?
Yeah.
I didn't know you were also a comedian.
In all honesty, we've gotten feedback on all the designs that we've submitted, all the individual projects, and have gotten good direction and are working through those comments as we speak. We expect, honestly, really within the next couple of weeks to have permits ready to roll on the two contracts that have already bid. And that's really what Bill was referring to earlier, is contractors are ready to go, and we believe that approval is imminent, and the others are working through comments on the initial schedules.
So are we in a position to start deciding the bidders at this point, or?
We can, and we go to the next item here.
That's the next item here.
So my question is that if they're still at the city, and you know there are comments, so with changes, it seems to me that these have already been put out for bid.
Correct.
So are they going to have an opportunity to amend their bids based on changes and comments that have been made by the city?
Yes, if changes or comments by the city affect the scope of work the contractor has to do, then he has the right and opportunity to submit a change order for those, as you would expect.
Okay.
But I think if the scope significantly changes, which you don't anticipate, you'd have to rebid.
That's correct.
When you bid out a project, the bids have got to be uniform.
Okay.
And the comments we've received so far have been minor in nature as they relate to the scope of work the contractor has to do. So we're very comfortable with the bids received, and that's a part of why we're making recommendation of award today on these, which is the next item.
Yep.
To
this. Yeah. So the next item is the review of bids and award of contracts and authorization to execute letter financing agreements for district facilities. Attached, there's two recommendation of awards, one for the off-site sanitary sewer facilities, We've received five bids on that one, and the Elliott Construction submitted the lowest base bid for $823,761.00. The construction of the demo and clearing and grubbing and mass grading, we received four bids on that one. And Texcon General Contractors submitted the lowest base bid. Their total was $1,740,289.06. These are all of these. The subsequent notice to proceed is subject to the final review and approval of the contractor's insurance bond, the 1295 form to the city, and getting the city permit. And
this isn't the lift station.
Not the lift station. This is just the gravity trunk sewer that connects the northern tip of Southern Point to the wastewater plant.
That's what the whole easement thing that
yes,
was in fight.
Yep.
Okay.
And the demo clearing grubbing.
Just basically doing all the dirt work preparation for the construction of Section 100. So,
is there an advantage to having the same contractor do both?
Yes and no.
Yeah.
There may be in theory. However, when time is of the essence, that's not always the case depending on the contractor's ability to do that. Plus the reality that the qualified low bidder, in other words, the qualified low bidder for both contracts has a good reputation and solid history, so we don't have really a reasonable justification to exclude them and go up to the next lowest bidder.
I agree. Do y'all have recommendation?
Yes. The recommendation for the there's two attached packets. One's a recommendation award for the offsite sanitary and Elliott. We absolutely recommend Elliott Construction and mass grading. On the back you'll see the attached summary of the bid tab, and then on the mass grading, Texcon was the low bidder, and we agree on that too. So we think we have two good contractors in place to accomplish this work. That we can count on and trust, and so and we thought they could make the schedule we need.
And so, really, the next steps out of this would be the board's approval of the recommendation of award, and then currently the contract documents are being circulated. Contractors are executing their part of that contract, preparing performance bonds, insurance, and things to be returned to the district for review by the district attorney. And getting those things vetted, and while that process is happening, we're expecting the permits to be issued very soon from the city. And so when all of those things are in place and executable, then we will be issuing the actual notice to proceed to the contractor to commence that contract.
Are these open or sealed bids?
These are public bids.
Public bids, so they
but
can...
But they're initially sealed.
Sealed, yes.
So everybody can't compete with
and then they
each other.
Have a bid opening,
yes.
Okay.
And then this is... They send out a notice.
And the contractors go up with a bid opening.
The contractors, yeah.
Yes.
I think
we'll
it's mandatory pre-bidding.
Yeah.
So they can't modify their bid after it's submitted.
No.
Over.
No.
So are each of
here.
From what I understand, though, everybody kind of knows, the contractors kind of know who's maybe.
Yes.
That.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they kind of know.
Yeah. That's their game. They know how to play it, but it's you know, meet all of the public bidding requirements, really, that any other political subdivision of the state, the city has to meet. Basically, we follow the same bidding criteria and bidding qualifications as the city does.
So we're spending $2.5 million, at least approving that, correct? And are these two separate motions, or is this one motion to accept?
All underneath the engineering report. You
okay.
To approve that, unless you, there's something you want.
Because this is essentially included in 9A.
In the report.
Yeah.
Yes.
How do y'all want to do it? I defer to y'all's wisdom. Do you want to take it piece by piece, or maybe do 9A through C, and then we can debate D a little bit more?
Or move to approve all of them, and then any discussion we can discuss.
Perfect. Have we discussed E yet?
Yeah, why don't y'all elaborate on
the access utility easements. I don't think we're ready to actually accept an easement at this time. So this was an easement that the property owners got from the adjacent property owners with the ability to assign it at a later date to either the district or the county. So
is that, that road?
Right, okay. Right. So there's no action needed from the district at this point. Yeah.
Okay, so we're not touching E?
Not touching E.
Okay.
There's nothing on D.
Nothing on D at this point.
Quick question. So on who is providing geotechnical services?
Terracon is providing geotechnical services.
And are they contracted with the work we're working, not Southern Point's work, but for the work that we're, the district's work, are they in a contract with you?
No.
Who are they in a contract with?
Development.
They're in a contract with the developer on your behalf.
Yep. On our behalf.
Still, yes.
And survey?
It's actually provided by Jones and Carter.
So you're providing survey and all engineering services and geotechnicals in a contract
with
the developer.
And the survey is in your agreement, not a separate agreement.
Right.
Right.
Obviously, Bill's going over all of this with fine-tooth comb, I guess, would be, and is having a lot of input. So I think.
Can we hear input on this from him as part of that?
Sure. I mean,
you're in line with the
you're in line with
recommendations.
And the recommendations, right?
I'm comfortable with the recommendations.
All right. So I guess we'll entertain a motion for 9, A, B, C, and D. And then we can do a motion and have some discussion before we vote.
Sure.
Okay. I so move.
So moved. All right. Do I have a second to Chuck's motion?
I'll second that.
Thank you. All right. We'll discuss before we vote. Anything else that we want to ask questions on A, B, C, or D, specifically the bid tabulation sheets that are before us as it relates to the grading, or mass grade, grubbing and mass grading, and the off-site sanitary sewer? It sounds like the clear recommendation is Texcon on grubbing and mass grading and Elliott Construction on off-site sanitary sewer. Our developer agrees with the recommendation of our engineer. Anything you want to elaborate?
They've qualified bidders, contractors, have great track records. They went through the public bid process. We feel there's nothing, no reason not to take them as they low bid.
So just since it's our first construction contract, the developer signs what we call a special conditions page, that basically the district is the owner for purposes of owning the facilities and accepting the utilities, but the developer is owner for purposes of payment. So, because the district has no money.
Yes.
So in this case, the development entity, Southern Point, will also be signing the construction contract and be responsible for everything having to do with payment.
And it's part of the reimbursement that we agreed with that new contract.
Exactly, okay. Exactly. And the engineer is keeping very detailed records as to the notices that were provided as far as the contract. They have to have everything in. This is all part of the TCQ. Once we go to get reimbursed, we have to provide huge packages of information to the regulatory agencies in order to preserve our reimbursement rights, and they'll want to see all of these, you know, notices in the paper, and everything under the competitive bidding laws was done properly. So it is highly regulated and very standard to industry.
So the contract will be issued after this approval?
Yes, but we will subject to, we'll go ahead and we'll review the insurance provided and the bonds to make sure that everything's enforceable, that they've got a registered agent, that it's in the proper amounts. And then we also need to get city approval prior to starting.
Will the contract have a sanction for delay and things like that? Because you have this 120-day on there.
Like liquidated damages?
Yes. There's an economic disincentives clause. And then there's a 1295 that has to be provided. Yeah. And the 1295 is that It's required by, it was a law that was adopted. We talked about this a couple sessions ago, that any time a contractor enters into a contract with a district or private entity, they have to file this 1295 with the Ethics Commission that lists who the interested parties are. They're part of, so Wallace is part of TexCon?
No, he is providing a service for one of the parts of TexCon's bid.
Yep. Okay.
Not all of it.
Okay.
He signed as a controlling interest.
Okay, but he did sign as a controlling interest.
Yeah.
Okay, so just to let the board know, it's legal, but one of the partners of the development entities is part of TexCon. So
TexCon's bid.
Part of TexCon's
bid. They're a subcontractor.
They're a subcontractor. Yeah, what TexCon...
You just have to make that disclosure.
It's normal in large bids like this that sometimes contractors will team up and have a lead contractor. And TexCon's the lead contractor, that's who your bid is with. But because of disclosure, Wallace Phillips has his own construction company. He is providing, like, I think the clearing and...
Water line.
And then they'll have another contractor who provides something else. And something. And TexCon, you know, manages it and does the lion's share of the work, but they'll subcontract.
And pays. TexCon
and
pays all the bills.
It's all, yeah, and we pay one person. We get the lien release from them. It's their contract. But it's just like them doing subcontracting. And everybody, most major contracts will have subcontractors in it. In this case, because one of the subcontractors has a vested interest in the development entity, need to let you know.
Sure. This is a question. I apologize.
No.
I'm trying
no
to
doubt.
Understand my duty.
Yeah,
I think this is
sure.
it. So in the event there was a flaw geotech, they base their bid on a line locate. They get down there. There's a problem. It ends up exceeding these cost controls. At the end of the day, we have no revenue. The obligation falls on the developer,
yes.
Right? So the reason we are approving these when it's really his money is because we're supposed to represent the future taxpayer and make sure that these are fair bids.
Right.
That's
right.
Our
these
duty,
are going to be done. Exactly.
We're
yes.
representing them to make
Absolutely.
Sure these aren't inflated such that
then
they end up
yeah.
getting more costs passed on.
Absolutely. That all these contracts are.
I'm trying to wrap my mind around
no,
it because
no,
we don't have money.
Right.
So I'm looking at
right.
it.
Right.
Like,
but
I
these will
have
be
the
public facilities.
Blow up. He pays it, not us.
Well, and these public facilities will eventually be paid for by the taxpayers
right.
out of the
right.
district.
And that's our duty is to protect them.
Absolutely.
I should know that.
These are
make
all
make sure that was where my position stood.
All good questions.
And I think it's clear by TexCon not being receiving both bids, there's no consideration
sure.
of that conflict when we're making that approval.
Right. And
well stated. All right, so we have a motion and a second, which I think everyone understands. We've had a lot of discussion before I call a vote. Any more discussion? If none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion passes. That takes us to 10, discussion formation of committees and taking appropriate action.
So I suggested to Bill that the board may want to form a construction committee. And we can kind of tie this into the discussion of how often we should meet. Typically, when a board is kind of in the beginning of the development stage, they may not meet every month just because there's not enough activity to generate every month. Probably since you've got two big construction contracts that are kicking off, you might want to meet every 2 or 3 months, Bill. I think maybe at the end of the summer we'll have some pay estimates to approve. But there could be the potential that in between meetings there are pay estimates need to be, you know, conditionally approved, or if for whatever reason the timing falls that you want to authorize the award of a contract but you're not going to receive the bids for another couple weeks and it's between meetings, sometimes boards will delegate to either the president or a couple folks on the board to accept bids within certain parameters, like maybe that fall that is the lowest bid with all of the requisite approvals. So if you want to add a little flexibility to the meeting schedule, in these beginning phases of development where you have a lot of development issues come up and a lot of construction issues come up, you all could decide internally, either designate one of the board members, the president, and another board member, to sort of be a little bit of an ad hoc committee that in case you want to, you've got to have less than quorum, but in case you want to consult with your engineer in the interim between meetings, you could do that.
Is that something that needs to be done right now?
No, it is okay. Nothing that needs to be done now, and you don't need to even do it. It's just
more discussing, right?
Yeah.
And let me just kind of weigh into this, is that, you know, obviously we got a lot of time constraints and we're trying to blow and go, and what we don't want to do is run over something that needs to go to the board. And what this allows is that if we have something within the construction purview, we're not talking about selling bonds or anything, just the construction purview, that we're able to go, hey, you have two people that are delegated to be able to go, we understand this, we have the authority to say move on this for the board, and then it will be represented to the board at a later date.
So
that you're updated on what their activities are.
So,
and it just allows for
just be sort of within certain parameters.
Going to ask you, you're probably going this, but what about minutes? Are we required to keep minutes?
No, it wouldn't be an open meeting. But let me suggest this, is if it's something that the board wants to consider, is at the next meeting I could bring a little policy, just a one-page policy that has suggested parameters of what a construction committee could do without full board authorization.
Circulate to the board.
Absolutely.
Prior to it.
Yeah. Why don't we do that? And y'all can take a look at it. You don't have to. We can.
I personally
meet every
think
month.
It's a good idea. Less,
is it
expedites
better for somebody
things.
With construction knowledge?
Yes.
Okay.
I agree with Chuck.
I think it's a great idea.
Yeah.
Good.
So, I think we all agree.
Okay, let's put it on the agenda for next month, and I'll circulate the policy and y'all can take a look at it.
All right, delayed action on item 6, 9E, and 10. Going to 11. Meeting schedule and items for inclusion on the next agenda.
What do you think? August, Bill, would be a good time?
I think we'll probably need a meeting in August. And I would guess probably.
You got a date?
And that's another thing we talk about. Now that we've got kind of an active construction schedule, it'd probably be helpful for everybody to have a regular meeting date, certain time, day of the month, that y'all knew it was either the third Friday or the third Thursday or whatever. What are we today? We don't want to do that.
We don't
want to do the fifth. It is not the fifth week.
February 29th.
I'm just thinking that we will need something probably first week, second week of August.
Okay.
Would be my guess. So let's say,
second week is 7th through the 11th.
Is it second Fridays? Are those good for everybody? No. Friday sometimes is hit or miss, I know.
It's my 35th anniversary, August 7th, so I probably wouldn't be here.
You better not be here.
Yeah. You better not be here.
That may be your last. Yeah, the last anniversary.
Second Friday's not good for me.
Second Friday's not good?
Yeah,
okay.
I'm flexible. If you want, y'all think a Thursday at noon is better, or a Friday, or however
you want
to do it.
First Friday of the month.
I would not recommend a Monday.
Fridays are better for me, but as to which one, that doesn't matter.
First Friday.
So that'd be August the 4th?
I'm fine with that.
First Friday, okay.
But then, okay. Yeah, that works.
First Friday for everybody else down at the table.
For your anniversary trip after the meeting.
Yeah.
So we're going August
4th. Okay. I'm going to take up a collection that week, so.
And then, you know, we can always adjust as needed as we go along. Okay. So we'll tentatively shoot kind of for the first Fridays of the month, unless y'all get conflicts with hunting season or football games or whatever. Fishing trips, I don't know what
happened. So is there anything, I guess, for 11, there's nothing official, we just have a general discussion there?
Well,
executive session.
Well, but I'm talking about on 11.
The meeting schedule.
Are we good?
We're good.
On
yeah,
it. Okay.
Yeah.
Going into 12 now, we need to convene
okay,
an executive session.
Okay,
Jay.
Yeah, we have one thing.
Okay. Okay, so for executive session, what we have to do?
No.
Yeah, I was going to say we're going to announce going into executive session. So everybody that is not a board member needs to step outside briefly, and we'll call you back in. So we're going into executive session. Okay, bye, Rose. Good to see you.
Bye, Rose.
Engineers, y'all mind stepping outside? For